Okay, good morning, everybody. The shiur from White Cotton, dedicated by the Baumzers at OMO Construction and Breakfast, sponsored by Bagel Munch, Lili Nishma Shimon Ben Zaev, and Fega Bas Chaim. We are on White Cotton, Daf Yed Ches. Last week we got to the top two lines on Yed Ches Amud Aleph, the topic being about during Avelus whether you're allowed to cut your nails. And here's what it says, a story. We had already at that time said that presumably you should follow, Shmuel certainly said, we should follow Lahakel or B'yosi, B'moyed Uba Avel, based on the principle, Halachak Divri Hamekel B'Avel, that matters of Avelus, whenever there's a dispute about something, we always lean in the direction of Lahakel, to be lenient about it, whatever that's based on. So now in our Gemara, Yed Ches Amud Aleph, the second line, Pinchas Achua Demar Shmuel. Pinchas, the brother of Shmuel, Shmuel the Amora, had a brother, Pinchas, not so well known. So apparently what happened here was Isrbe Milsa. Something happened to him. That's what that means. Euphemistically, it means that he became an Avel in such a way that it didn't affect his brother. So that suggests like a child who died. So it says Pinchas was an Avelus and his brother Shmuel comes. Al Shmuel Emishel Taima Mine. So Shmuel comes to be Menachem Avel. That's the expression that the Gemara here is using for. He came to visit and do Nicham Avel. Chazinu LeTufri, they have an efficient. So Shmuel is seeing his brother's fingernails are long. And Amar Leah, Milo Shaklis Lehu. So why aren't you cutting off your nails? Amar Leah. So Pinchas tells his brother, Ibidi Deyavas, Hava. If you were the one sitting in a velus, me mizal zealous bay kulihai, would you be so, I don't know, I guess so indifferent to your velus? Would you be so callous as to cut your fingernails during Shiva? So what did he tell him? He told him that, not that you're not allowed necessarily, but he's telling him, but, you know, I can't bring myself to engage in this type of luxury, I guess. Anyway, but because the way he said it to his brother Shmuel was, like, well, if you are sitting in a velus, so then, havi kishgaga sheyotza milifnei ha-shalit, in retrospect, you see that this was kind of a mistake for him to say such a thing. The Isra Bei Milsad B'Shmuel. So soon afterwards, Shmuel also became an Avel, also that didn't affect his brother Pinchas, so presumably again, like Shmuel was in the same circumstance like a child died. And Al Pinchas Achua L'Mishal Taim Amine says, brother Pinchas comes to be Menachem him. So Shmuel, who's kind of feeling resentful and angry, Shaklinu Litufre and Chavatinu Liape. And Shmuel takes his fingernails and he cuts them off and he throws them Laape of his brother. I guess Laape can either mean Bifanav or Lefanav. Either he throws them in front of him or he throws them in his face. And Amar Lei, and he says to his brother, what's the matter with you? Leslach Bris Krusa Lisfasayim. At the time, why'd you have to curse me with becoming an Avel by the way you said it? Don't you know, Bris Krusa Lisfasayim, don't you know that the way the world works is that the way you talk tends to bring about the things that you say? And therefore, the way it says over here, Bris Krusa Lisfasayim, don't you know that there's a bris that's made between your lips and, I guess, the world? That what you say comes true. Shenamar, where do you see such a thing? Where do you see a source for this? Shenamar, Vayomer Avraham el Ne'arav. Avraham Avinu tells the Ne'arim there, who are accompanying him on the trip to do Akedas Yitzchak, to go kill Yitzchak. He says, all right, you know what? You guys stay here. Shavulachem poim achamor, v'ani v'hanar ne'elchad. Go, and I and Yitzchak are going to go and take a walk. And we're going to come back. So obviously at the time that he said it, he really had no intention of coming back with Yitzchak because he knew he was going to go kill Yitzchak. But the way he said it, was we're going to return, and that's what happened. V'istaya milsa, the hadar tarvayu, that and it happened, and that's how it worked out, was that they both came back. So we're taking from that pasuk. This is how the Chazal often, they often kind of extract unexpected pieces of the thing that we wouldn't have necessarily looked at that and extracted this message. But anyway, they picked up from this message that, you see, careful how you talk, the way you talk will influence the way things happen. Tosis points out that that was in a good thing, and sometimes we take the view that Hashem runs the world kind of in slanted more in favor of good things, in which case there's no reason to think from this lesson that you have to worry about the adverse things that you say. But nevertheless, the Gemara over here takes this to be, you have to be careful what you say, don't talk like that. That's why when it comes to Avelus things, it's all Masechta, you know, everybody circumlocutes. Everybody just talks around and uses euphemisms, and you just carefully, you try not to talk about things like let's say I'm in a village. You don't want to talk that way because of this kind of mystical fear.
Sorry for interrupting. I knew Rosh Schwab's at Washington Heights.
Yeah.
I was a little boy. I asked him by this passing, Avraham Avinu said, we're going to return.
Yeah.
The Rosh says, he was this now, that they were going to return.
Okay.
So I said, if that's the case, where's the great miracle? They knew they were coming back. And he thought he was going to shech them. But I knew they were coming back. I asked him this question.
Ah, okay, good.
He had a child.
What did Rashad tell you?
He said to me, he was in the snobbing. He knew they were coming back, but he didn't know in what form. As far as he knew,
the body might have come back. That's interesting. Okay, which leads to the question of, is it called we're coming back if you're taking back a body? Well, I don't know. But anyway, yeah, that could be what's going on. Is that he knew that we would both be back one way or the other.
Yeah.
Okay. In which case, you can't learn this lesson from here. Because even if he came back dead, it would have been so I don't know. Hard to know for these kinds of hashkafa-like things. In any case, okay, so at least that's what's happening over here. That we're being told that Pinchas and his brother Shmuel, as much as Pinchas felt reluctant to cut his fingernails during Avelis, during Shiva, his brother Shmuel didn't have any such reluctance. Anyway, Savar Mine, Diyad in the Regalo. So some of the Talmidim, I guess, were, from the story, they were thinking, well, maybe the leniency of cutting the fingernails only applies to the fingernails of your hand, maybe not to your fingernail, to your toenails. The regalo. Amar Rav Anan bar Tachlifa lididei. Rav Anan bar Tachlifa pipes up and he says, well, it might be unclear to you, but I've had it told to me explicitly. Lididei mefarshali mineder Shmuel. I had it told explicitly that Shmuel said about this, loshna diyad veloshna de regal. Doesn't matter if it's fingernails or toenails. Allowed to cut them during Shiva. Amar Rav Chiya Barashi, Amar Rav. Rav Chiya Barashi says in the name of Rav, contemporary of and frequent disputant of Shmuel, Beginustra Aser, but you can't use a clipper or a scissors. You have to like take it off by hand. Or if you bite your fingernails, you could bite them. Amar Rav Shemen Baraba, Haba kwa imna kamed Reb Yochanan bei Midrasha b'chola shel moed. So that was all Avelus rules. So now we're kind of switching. That's what we've been doing before also. We were kind of going back and forth between chola moed and Avelus because they share the same Iser. So now Reb Shemen bar Abba says, well, I was kwa imna kamed Reb Yochanan bei Midrasha b'chola shel moed. I was once in the shir of Reb Yochanan on chola moed. And I saw he was biting his nails with Zarkinu. And he was throwing the nails onto the floor. So Shmamina Talas. So I learned three things from watching him do that. What were the three things? Shmamina, first of all, number one, Shemutter Litol Tzipor Naim B'chola Shel Moed. I learned, I guess one thing I was assuming was that he had self-control to be able to stop himself from biting his fingernails if he wanted to, and he wouldn't have bit his fingernails a chol hamoed. So assuming that that was the case, then I see that he's deliberately biting his fingernails on Chol HaMoed, which means Mutar Litol Tziporayim V'Chol HaShel Moed. So number one is that you're allowed to cut your fingernails on Chol HaMoed. Shema Amina Ein B'Hem Yishem Miyus. The second thing I learned is that you're allowed to bite your nails in public, and that that's not considered a repulsive public behavior. And Shema Amina Mutar Lizorkan. And I've also learned from him that you're allowed to take your fingernails and throw them on the floor. The Gemara says, whoa, hold on a minute, that's not possible. 80. But that doesn't make any sense because after all, Tanya, there's a braisa that Shlosha Dvarim Ne'emru B'tzipor Nayim. We have three gradations of what to do with your fingernails. Hakovran Tzadik. If you bury them, then make them like permanently inaccessible, Tzadik. Ah, you're pious. Sorfan Chasid. But if you burn them and they're gone altogether, so then chassid, then you're above tzaddik, then you're even higher than tzaddik, then you're a chassid. And hazorkan, rasha. But if all you do is just throw them on the floor, you're a rasha. So the Gemara says, taimamai. Presumably this is the answer. The Gemara is answering this question. He says, well, look, let's think about this. What is the reason that the Gemara says these descriptions of the fingernails? In other words, back it up. Why are you not allowed to throw your fingernails on the floor? Because Shema ta'avor lehanisha ubra v'tapil. Because what if a pregnant woman walks by on the fingernails and it'll make her miscarry? So there's nothing physical about this, unless you want to learn this physically, but presumably this is some kind of a spiritual thing, a mystical thing, some kind of mystical phenomenon that they, even in the Gemara times, were nervous about. Maybe only in the Gemara were nervous about this. But in any case, that's the objection. And so as a result, if you can prevent that from happening by burning the fingernails, by getting rid of fingernails, so then that's the proper thing. But if you just throw them on the floor, so then it's like a public nuisance or a menace or something. You've just done something that is a danger, a hazard to the public. So you're not allowed to do that. The Gemara says, well, because that's the reason, it doesn't apply in Rabbi Yochanan's case. Why? Because Isha Bei Midrash Lo Shchicha. Because women aren't roaming around the Beis Medrash. So you see from here that that's the only problem. What?
They haven't been discerned.
Right. Okay. So that's one thing, is that they were still in the times when women weren't in the basement. But also...
Not even for cleaning.
What?
Not even for cleaning.
Yeah, the cleaning lady.
Not even for cleaning.
I suppose not. I guess... I don't know if they cleaned the basement. Anyway, so the point is that you see that's the only reason. Once it's the only reason... And then when the reason doesn't apply, you don't have to worry about this. And also that it's not a low plug, and it's not a takana derban. And like you can see from the fact that if in your circumstance there's no concern about a pregnant woman roaming around, so then you wouldn't have anything to worry about. You're allowed to get rid of your fingernails wherever you want. So Gemara says, well, hold on a second. Don't they ever sweep up? I guess they did sweep out the Beis Medrash. Must have been the fellas in the Beis Medrash doing that. Gemara says, yeah. And so the point being, so you see that these fingernails are still there to do harm, and you sweep them out, so then it doesn't matter that no one's going to walk into the Beis Medrash pregnant. They're going to be, it's going to be swept outside. Gemara says, no, that's not a problem. Kevan de ishtana ishtani. If you're sweeping them outside, it loses its mystical harm. So... no problem. Okay, I don't know. This is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, so it's like they still take this seriously. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda is the name of Rav. Anyway, that's really it. Well, let's see. There's a little bit more. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Zug ba mei chamsan lifnei Rebbe. Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav the following, that there was once a pair of people who came from Hamas to Rebbe to ask him a question. And then we interrupt ourselves here by saying, incidentally, Marzutra presents this as not a statement from Rav, but as a braisa. Masni zug ba mechamsin lifnei Rebbe. In any case, Bikshu mimenu tziparnayim. They asked, what's the halacha of tziparnayim? The hitir lahem. And he permitted. Okay, that's very consistent with everything that we've been seeing. But then it says here, v'yim bikshu mimenu safa, hitir lahem. If they had asked him, what about mustaches? He also would have permitted it. Shmuel actually presents it that way. Amar af bikshu mimenu safa v'hitir lahem. Shmuel's version of the story had it that apparently this was a story that was going around. It was a big deal. They asked Rebbe, what about trimming your mustache? And he permitted it. And see, Rashi, this Rashi here on the page says that this is Bimei Evlo during Avelis. So that Rashi's learning that this Gemara is saying, can you trim your mustache during Avelis? Normally you have an Isur against cutting your hair during Shiva and Shloshim and even past Shloshim for a parent. And so it's saying, what about the mustache? It says he allowed it. Or he would have allowed it. One version of the story or the other. Amar Avitol Safra Mishmei, the Rav, somebody, either Rav or Rav Papa, that Safa me zavis lezavis, that you can either even or only trim the whole mustache from one side to the other. But what's really the basis of the heter? Amar Rabbi Ami ubisafa hamayakevis. The whole thing we're talking about here is when the mustache is growing so long that it interferes with your eating. People with mustaches, I guess, know all about this phenomenon, and so they need to trim it. And even during Shiva, presumably, you'd be allowed to trim your mustache because that's not avelus. To have to endure the obstruction, the nuisance of eating with this with long mustache hairs is not really what avelus is for. So you'd be allowed to trim it. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Lididi. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, well, for me, kisafa hameyakeves dummy. For me, he doesn't really explain exactly why and what aspect of himself makes it like him say this, but he says, like, for me, my mustache is as if it's interfering with my eating, and it's such a nuisance, so I would be allowed to trim my mustache. Okay, I don't even know what to learn from that. What does he mean? He means that anybody who feels so bothered by their long mustache would be allowed to make this judgment call and to say, yeah, well, this is too much of a nuisance for me. I have to trim my mustache a little. Okay, maybe. Yom Rabbi Yitol, Safra Mishmei Derab. So now we move into an Agadita here. Kind of an unusual Agadita. Okay, this once we brought up this Avitol, the Sofer, Safra, quoting something from Rav. Paro, Shehaya Bimei Moshe. The Paro, who was the guy who was making trouble for Moshe and Bnei Yisrael and enslaved them and eventually had to let them go. Who? Amma. He was only an Amma tall. He was a midget. It was a Kano Amma. And his beard was an Amma long, so it dragged on the floor. U Parmashtiko Amma. And his reproductive organ was an Amma Vizeris. An Amma and a Zeris along. So it was kind of all deformed. Exactly what to do with this medrash, who knows. The Kayim Ashenemar Shval Anashim Yakom Alei. Okay, based on a pasuk about how about the anyway. Okay, whatever. What's an agadita? Something or other about Paro. There are a couple of other agaditas like that. The Amar Ravi Tol Safra Mishmei Derav. Somebody Paro Shaybi Mei Moshe Amgushi Haya. Another statement here of this Avital quoting something from Rav or of Papa. The Paro, that same guy, was an Amgushi, was a magician. Actually, the word Magushi and magician are actually not coincidentally related. Shenamar hina yotzei hamayma, etc. Okay, good to know, I guess. Two dots. All right, back to... now we're up to the part of the Mishnah, the second half. Remember the first Mishnah, the Perek, was telling us about how normally you're not allowed to take haircuts on Chol HaMoed, and we learned the reason for that and the exceptions. So now we're also being told that you're not allowed to also do laundry and during Chol HaMoed, and there are exceptions to those as well. So now we've moved into that part of the Mishnah. The Eilim Mechabsim B'Moed, Habamim Dina Siyam, etc. The following people can do laundry on Chol HaMoed, And there's a list of those. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Asi quotes from Rabbi Yochanan. These are Amoraim now talking. Misha ein lo ela chaluk echad. What if you only have one garment? Mutar lechabso b'chol shel moed. Then, in that case, you're allowed to wash that on chol moed. You have to assume, presumably, the point of the Isser in the first place, right in the Mishnah, what was the whole point of the Isser in the first place? It wasn't the violation of Chol HaMoed or anything. It was an inducement to make sure that you would do your laundry before Yantiv starts. Because if you're told, you're not going to be allowed to do your laundry for the next week plus, so then you know you'll think ahead, you'll make sure you get your laundry done before you start it. So if you only have one chaluk, presumably that's that's more important for you to make sure that at least that one chaluk gets washed before Yantiv starts, right? Presumably. If you have multiple, you may not be thinking that way.
But if it gets dirty during the Chol HaMoed, then if he has only one, then he can wash it again.
Right. In other words, so you might say this. Because he only has one chaluk, as long as he did his, he washed it before the regal start, he did whatever he could be doing. He took maximum precautions, so then during Chol HaMoed, maybe there would be some room for leniency. That's what it looks like should be going on over here. That if you only have one chaluk, what do you want from the guy? Mutar lechabso b'chol shel moed. So Masi Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah said to him, I don't understand. Why do you say such a thing? Isn't that against the Mishnah? Doesn't the Mishnah say, Elu, the following people, mechabsin b'moed? Abam Yimdina say, Yam Tetra, all these unusual cases where there are what the Gemara kind of generalizes to, onsim that are apparent to everybody, that you were unable to launder properly beforehand. So Haniyin, Mishen Lo Elachaluk Echad Lo. So it doesn't say a guy who only has one garment on that list. So Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov tells Rabbi Yirmiyah, well, let me explain the Mishnah. Asbara Lach Masnisa. Let me explain the Mishnah. Afal Gav De Islei Trei Umitanfi. Clearly the Mishnah is telling us a Chiddush that for these cases of the Mishnah, it doesn't matter how many begotim you have, you can wash them. If you didn't have clean clothes during Chol HaMoed, you can wash what you have. But it doesn't even deal with the case of the one garment person, because that's like kind of cuts across as being obviously lenient, obviously mutar. So you can't prove from the Mishnah that it's not true. Shalach Rav Yitzchak Bar Yaakov Bar Giyori Mishmeid Rav Yochanan. Another leniency it doesn't say. Klei Pishtan Mutar Lachabsin B'Chol HaShel Moed. Linen clothes, you're allowed to wash on Chol HaMoed. Why? Rashi over here says, well, why the linen clothes? We'll have to see over there. They give you two reasons why. Okay, first of all, because they're easy to wash. The Rishonim say they're easy to wash, and because they get dirty frequently. So we'll have to see how that plays out. Masiv Rava, mitpechos hayadayim. Rava attacks him. He says, but that's against the Mishnah. Mishnah says only mitpechos hayadayim, mitpechos hasafarim, haniin, klei pishtin lo. He says to him, no, it's only certain kinds of hand towels or other kinds of things that frequently get dirty. And there's a special leniency on those. Haniin, klei pishtin lo. On Amud Beis, it says here, You shouldn't be able to infer a leniency of Pishtan. Amarle Abaye says back to him, Masnisan afilu disha armine. Well, the Mishnah is talking about it in the general case without specifying. So if it's a general towel or whatever, if it's the mitbachos hasafarim, mitbachos hayadayim, you'd be allowed to wash them a chol HaMoed. But if it's clay Pishtan, then we'd have to kind of turn that into like the case of underwear, then that would be, that's not even mentioned in the Mishnah, but that would be allowed. Alright, so in other words, the point is that he's saying that it's allowed to wash these frequently laundered clothing, and the Rishonim add, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes also children's clothing as an example of this. Some really are specifically talking about diapers. We don't have that in our world anymore, but the time when they used to launder the diapers. But maybe other kids' clothes generally. Heter and Chol HaMoed. Amar Bar Hedia. Berhedia says, somebody lived in the times of the Amoraim here. Lidi di chazile yamashel tveri de mafkile me shichli de money kitna bechol de moeda. You know, I used to see on the banks of the Kinneret River that they would have, it would like be filled with women doing their laundry on Chol HaMoed, washing their linen clothes, as if that's proof that this is allowed. The Mask of Labai, Abai says to him, doesn't prove anything. Man leim alan debertan chachamim. That's not a proof, because that's what they were doing, but that doesn't mean that the rabbis were approving of it. So it doesn't prove anything just because a lot of people are doing this. We know that for sure nowadays also, especially in Chol HaMoed. People do whatever they want. It doesn't
it's
mean
like
that they have rabbinic endorsement.
People eating in a restaurant. Okay, you figure, okay, it's got to be kosher, but...
Right, so that's that might be what the... It's like a Marisayan type thing, yeah. Yeah. Just because you see people doing it doesn't necessarily mean that the rabbis are behind it. Okay, Mishnah. New Mishnah. It says, Ve'elu kosvin b'moed. We're moving into a whole other domain now. We're talking about writing. You're not allowed to write a Chol HaMoed. It's one of the malachos, unless you have the heterim, same as every other activity in Chol HaMoed. Ve'elu kosvin b'moed. The following are things that you're allowed to write on Chol HaMoed. Kiddushei nashim v'gitin v'shovrin. Kiddushei nashim means the... Hard to know. The Gemara is going to clarify what are Kiddushei Nashim. But it sounds a little bit like it's the wedding document, Gitin, or divorce document, Shovrin, our receipts, Daitike, our wills, or bequests, Matana, same kind of a thing, Prosbolin, that's a Prosbol, in the Shemitah year, Igros Shum, the Igros Mazon, documents of assessment, shum, are determinations of value, assessment documents, and igros mazon, and documents are... The Gemara is going to kind of clarify this about commitments as to support documents, shtari chalitza, umiyonin, and then these other things are like based in documents. Documents involving that a chalitza happened, and a miyun happened, and shtari berurin, and that the dayanim were chosen, and gzeros based in, and based in piskei din. Then igros shel rishus.
Other than school notes and a love letter, almost anything else is permissible.
Yeah, pretty much anything. We're going to see in the next mission at the bottom of the page some things that may or may not be allowed. So let's see, what's the heter, incidentally, of any one of these things, of all of these things? So Rashi here on the page says that the basis for everything is Davar Ha'avid. These are all things that are somewhat time-sensitive, in the sense, Tosus has it also, that if you don't write these things down now, well, now is the opportunity to write it, so then if you wait until after the Zman, after the Yantif is over, you may either forget or have disputes, or not have the opportunity to write it, depending on the circumstance. But if it's not true, if nobody feels that this is something that needs to be written down now, so then you should wait. Amar Shmuel. Gemara says, Shmuel says, Yamora now. Shmuel the Yamora has the following. Now, this touches on what we learned earlier. We learned 10 dafim ago that you're not allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed. Right? At that time, what did we say? That was based on either psukim or ein marvin simcha b'simcha. So over here, this is coming up again. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says, Mutar li areis isha b'chol shel moed. Now, he says you're allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed. This is Shmuel the Amora saying you're allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed. Shema yikadmenu acher. So nobody else can kind of get in there and marry her away from you. If you're on the verge of a proposal, then you can do it even over Chol HaMoed.
This is the Suva or Kudayim?
This is the wedding. This is the marriage. This is getting married. So the thing is that this is Shmuel the Amora talking. Presumably there was no information in Mishnayos or Braisos about this, which is why Shmuel has to say that you're allowed. The problem is very obvious to us, is that we know this is against the mission from 10 Daphne ago, where it says you're not allowed to get married in Chol HaMoed. So you have to remember that from the psukim, From the psukim, you don't have any of this. From the psukim, all you know is that you're either married or you're not. There's just two conditions. You're either married or you're not. When the Chazal, for some reason or other, they took marriage and they split it into two parts. The legal status of being married versus the actual reality of what it means to be married. You have to start a family and you're responsible for each other. You're living in the same place. So that is the reality of marriage is separated from the legality of the marriage, the legal status of being married. You don't see that in the Chumash. And they had some kind of a reason or other why that was something important. And so they used to have the marriage, and the marriage, the legality of marriage, what I would consider to be like getting married on paper is called Kiddushin, also called Erusin. In modern Hebrew, those words aren't the words, but these are the words that are being used. When you're married on paper, that's Erusin, that's Kiddushin, that's when he gives her a ring. All of that is something that is what Shmuel is talking about here. You're allowed to do that. But the point was that then after that procedure, they would just go home and they still weren't starting a family. They're not moving in together. So, but they are legally married. So the point is that that would require a divorce to break that up. And what it says in the Mishnah over here is the other part, which is the real marriage. When they actually become responsible for each other and they move in together and they're starting a family, that whole marriage is nisuin, that's chuppah. Chuppah triggers the nisuin, which is also called the chasana, the chitun. So all of those are synonymous. So that's what you're not allowed to do in Chol HaMoed. That's what Shmuel is telling us. Even though earlier we said you're not allowed to do the nisuin, but he says, but you are allowed to do the erusin. And look what he says. He says, the reason why you're allowed to do the erusin is Shema Yekadmenu Acher. So no one else can get in there and take her away from you. That's what it says. So of course the logic is a little weird. If no one's allowed to get married, then no one else can get in there and take her away from you, because they're just as bound by this restriction as you are. So it's funny. But anyway, you'll see in a second that for other reasons, this doesn't mean that someone else is going to marry her away from you. It's something else. We're about to be doing, from here down, it's one of possibly the most important hashkafic even slash halachic daf, with respect to prayer and hashkafas of shiduchim and weddings and basherts and all kinds of important principles like this, which really affect how we think about the world. If only we could figure out what the Gemara is actually saying. But this is a daf that's worth doing a lot of analysis. So let's see. Here's what it says. The Gemara says, well, hold on a second. Let's start analyze the halacha itself. Shmuel says you're permitted to do erusin, which means you're allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed with erusin, just not a nisuin. Recently, we got rid of that whole distinction, and we moved things back to the way they originally were. We only have a single wedding, and it goes transitions from single to fully married without that peculiar stage in the middle of legal marriage, but not de facto marriage. So anyway, things are better now. The Gemara says, "Lema misayele ve'ilu kosvin b'moed kiddushei nashim." So it seems like our Mishnah is a good support for what Shmuel said. Shmuel the Amora tells us you're allowed to get married, and our Mishnah sounds like it's saying that too, because it says you're allowed to write the wedding document, the kiddushei nashim. The Gemara says, "Well, my love, shtari kiddushin, mamish." Doesn't that mean the actual paper that you're going to use to get married with? Because that's one of the ways you can get married. You write on a piece of paper, you are now my wife with this piece of paper, and he hands it to her, and the witnesses see it, and they saw that she took it, and then they're married. We don't get married that way, we just use a ring. So, but at least that would be effective. So it says here in the Mishnah, you're allowed to write such a document on Chol HaMoed. So you see that you can use it on Chol HaMoed, otherwise why are you writing it now? Gemara says, no, that's not at all what the Mishnah was talking about. It wasn't talking about the piece of paper that you get married with. It's talking about shtari psikasa. No, it's not talking about the wedding document. It's talking about the tanayim document. What is a Tanayim? Nowadays we have Tanayims at weddings, and it's really a meaningless piece of paper. But it's an echo of what was at one time a very meaningful paper. What?
It's a photo op.
Yeah, it's a photo op pretty much. There's really nothing significant or legal about it. But it used to be extremely significant and legal. And what it was the families, when the couple was engaged, the families would meet, would discuss, and would commit. So they committed to two things. They committed to what they would provide for the new couple when they get married, in terms of support. And the second thing is what they would pay as a penalty for their side breaking the engagement. And these are legal commitments. These are terms that they would be discussing, and they would have to record the terms as a tanayim. That's when you break the plate and everything. That was all happening at the engagement. Kidderav Gittel Dama Rav. The Amar of Gittel Amar Rav. Rav Gittel said from Rav that Kama Atanosin Lebincha, Kach Vekach, Kama Atanosin Lebitcha, Kach Vekach. Right? So these kinds of commitments that you make before they get married. And Amdi Vikichu Kanu. Hein Hein Hadvar Maniknam Beamira. If they acted based on those commitments and they went and they got married, then even though normally when you make a commitment, you have to do a kinyan for it to be legally binding. Otherwise, it's just words. It's just a pledge, just a promise, which really is not binding. But this is an exception. Because when they committed to what they're going to give and what penalties they're going to incur for breaking the engagement, if they went and they got married as a result, of course, the commitments then are actually enforceable. They're binding, even though it was just verbal agreements. So the point is that even though they made a verbal agreement, but in time you want it to be recorded. So it says here, that's the shtari psikos, the document that records those commitments. So now the Gemara says, that's all that maybe the Mishnah is referring to. Therefore, you can't prove from our Mishnah that you're allowed to get married. But you can prove from a Mishnah that you'd be allowed to write down such documents. And presumably, that's what this is about. The reason why you'd be allowed to write down such a document is if you have the feeling that if you wait too long, one side or the other are going to change what they agreed to. But at least at this point, you would be able to write down their commitments. So that's why it's like a Davar HaAved. Anyway, Lema Misayele, well, let's see. Maybe we could prove that Shmuel is right about getting married with Erisin and Chol HaMoed from the Mishnah from 10 Dafim ago. Namely what? Namely, Ein Nosim Nashim B'Moed. Lo Besulos, V'lo Almanos, Lo Miyabmin. You're not allowed to get married with Nisuin on Chol HaMoed. Whether first marriages, second marriages, Yibum. Why? Because of the problem of Simcha and whatever the problem of Simcha causes. That was in the 10 Dafim ago, they discussed that. Gemara says, you see that the only problem is Nisuin, Ha'la'areis Shari. So can't you infer from that Erisin is Mutter? Well, you can infer from that, at least that it's not explicitly forbidden, but what we're trying to now suggest that you can infer that Erisin is implicitly permissible. Gemara says, no, that inference is not strong. Maybe Lomi Boikomer. Maybe the Mishnah only emphasized Nisuin, not to tell me to limit the prohibition to Nisuin, but to allow Erisin. It's to tell me that even Nisuin, Lomi Boikomer, Lomi Boidli, I raised the Lokovin Mitzvah. Maybe the Mishnah, when it told us that you can't get married with Nisuin, it was saying the following, saying, look, obviously you can't get married at all, certainly not Erisin, because when you get married with Erisin, you're not even doing any mitzvah to justify the getting married. Elafila Lisa, but even to do Nisuin with chuppah and everything, that, the Kohavid mitzvah, that, where you're really doing the mitzvah of getting married, Asur, you're still not allowed to. So you're supposed to infer the reverse, that if you're not allowed to get married with Nisuin, then you wouldn't be allowed to get married with Erisin either, like Mikal V'Chomer. At least that's one of the possible inferences. But you're not sure, one or the other. So that's the thing, is that you can't tell one way or the other from that Mishnah. And therefore Shmuel is saying, it doesn't support me, although it doesn't necessarily refute me either. One very remarkable thing that you're seeing from these few lines here is that Abba Gemara actually says, black on white, getting married with Erisin is not a mitzvah. That's unbelievable. The reason I say it's unbelievable is because, for one thing, we actually say bracha, asher kitshana b'mitzvah sub, before he gives the ring. And the Rambam actually lists to get married as one of the 613 mitzvahs. So it's one of those things. And the Gemara in Kiddushin says that applies the principle of mitzvah bo yoser mi bishlucho to the kiddushin, to giving the ring. So, in which case, it's a funny thing. Our Gemara makes this comment here. All the Rishonim are all aware of the difficulty, so they all have something to say about it. In any case, let's see. So we still have a statement of Shmuel, unsupported and unrefuted. Tashma. Well, so now we get to the bottom of this. The Tana de Bei Shmuel. Now we discover the following. We discover that in Shmuel's Beis Medrash, there was somebody there who actually had a braisa in support. That what? Me'arsin, avalo konsin. You're allowed to do erisin, but not nisuin. Okay, that's consistent with what we knew from before and what Shmuel is telling us. Ve'ein osin se'udas erisin, a new thing. But even when they do the erisin, you can't throw a party. That you can't make an erisin party. Which would not really be an engagement party. Because this is not engagement. This is an actual wedding. So it's kind of a mini wedding party. Below me yabmin, and you can't do yibum because that's consistent with nisuan. Anyway, shmamina. Okay, so this proves that this brisa is consistent. It proves Shmuel, and we don't have any competing ones, so that stands.
So, question. Since we just said you're not allowed to have a wedding party.
Yeah.
Somebody who gets married Erev Yontif.
Sheva brachas
would be the question.
Yeah.
That's like a residual party.
Yeah. So you would figure that you shouldn't be allowed to, for whatever the reason, you can't do any suin from over here. But the Shulchan Aruch says explicitly that you see from the fact that they just proscribe getting married on Chol HaMoed, that they don't object to getting married the week before Yantif, so they're not concerned. Okay, I don't know exactly why, but they're not concerned about the simcha level of the shavur brachas. That's allowed. Anyway, now the Gemara says in Yomer Shmuel. So now we get into the hashkafa of it. Really, would Shmuel really have said such a thing that you're allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed with Erisin so as to ensure that you don't lose her? Shema Yekadmenu Acher. It's always that way. It's always this asymmetric. You're talking to the man who wants to marry the woman, and the question is, it never pays any attention to the woman and who she wants to marry and the possibility that maybe he'll marry someone else, so she should propose. They don't talk that way.
In those days, women didn't have much of a choice.
I'm not sure that's true. I don't know if that's true. They might have had a choice. It wasn't necessarily the initiative. She wasn't taking initiative. But I don't know if you could say that she didn't have a choice.
On the other hand, bird in the hands were two in the bush.
Yeah, so which way does that go? So that's either way. You're saying that's why she wouldn't have a choice, because she would be apt to be interested, even in the first proposal that comes along.
Situation comes up.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So in any case, we're asking about Shmuel's worldview, his hashkafa. V'ha'amar Rav Yehuda amar Shmuel. But didn't Rav Yehuda tell us from Shmuel the following? B'chol yom v'yom, every day, baskol yotzeis v'yomeres. Baskol, a heavenly voice, announces, bas ploni leploni. In other words, it's recording the business that they've conducted in heaven, of they've spent that day making shiduchin. Bas ploni leploni. Sedei ploni leploni. All of these kinds of things that they've determined in Shemayim. So once they've determined it in Shemayim, so then what are you worried about? So why are we going to say that you should be concerned if you don't take action now, you might lose her? How can you lose her? That's already been determined in Shemayim. Yeah, that was the objection. So how do you reconcile Shmuel's attitude with respect to Chol HaMoed, with his attitude with respect to the whole decree from Shemayim, the Baskol from Shemayim? Ella, the Gemara says, oh, okay, well, here's how you reconcile it. It doesn't mean get married in Chol HaMoed because otherwise you lose her. It's get married in Chol HaMoed because otherwise someone else will pray something that will change things. Shema yekadmenu acher berachamim. Maybe somebody else will pray something and that'll change the heavenly arrangement. What does that even mean at all? And what are they praying? And if it's true, then it just boils down to exactly the same thing, is that you might lose her. So it comes down to the same exact thing anyway. And is that possible? I mean, they can make a heavenly decree and you can just influence that? Okay. Exactly. You know, like I'm saying, this is a probably really important passage of Gemara for Hashkafa purposes and for Tefillah purposes also. I mean, the Hashkafa is, I don't know, but for Tefillah, it's, let's see, look at the next story. Kihadir Rava. Once Rava, like the story that they tell as follows, that Rava wrote once, Shama Elahu Gavra, once heard a guy, the boy Rafmi, who was praying, and Rava was able to eavesdrop on his prayer, and he heard him say the following, the Amr, Tizdamin li Pilanisa. He was praying to God that this, that woman should marry him. Should be available to marry him. In other words, he was praying to marry a certain girl. So Amar Lei. So Rava says to him when he finishes praying, says, Lo ti boy rachami hachi. That's not a proper thing to pray. Wow, that's like important to get this kind of guidance about what to pray and what's a suitable prayer and what kinds of personal prayers you should be or shouldn't be composing. So he tells him, that's not a proper prayer. If she's right for you, you won't lose her. So there's no reason to pray. The ilo, and if she's not right for you, and here you are praying for her as if like you've kind of so committed to her, you're so stuck on her, and she's not right for you, and therefore you're not going to get her, presumably. The Rishonim have different interpretations of what's going on over here. Kafarta b'Hashem. You're going to end up becoming a kofar b'Hashem in some way. It doesn't really play out exactly what the connection is and how that's going to happen. But either because you're going to become disgusted with prayers generally, with God generally, with your rotten life, and it's going to, oh, look, but if you just have a different attitude about, well, you'll get what's coming to you, so then... And that's better. I don't know. Is that true about everything in your life? About prayer? About this specifically? Exactly. What is the message from in this Gemara? It's such an important thing. If only we could know what they're saying. Anyway, this is all Rava talking. Do all the other Amoraim agree? I don't know. Anyway, Basar Hachi, at some later time, so to know whether or not the guy followed Rava's instructions, Basar Hachi, afterwards, Shamei de Ko'amar, he hears the guy praying again, and now he's eavesdropping again, and he hears him say the following: God, either she should die or he should die. He being either himself or that other guy, or I don't know what happened. She didn't get married. She's still single. She's refused his advances. I mean, it's unclear exactly what's going on, but either whatever it is, the nature, the tone of the prayer changed, but the whole spirit of the prayer is the same. That we're talking about a guy who's still kind of locked onto the same girl, and so Amar Lei. So Rava says, "Blava mina lach." Didn't I tell you, "Lo tiboya la de milsa hachi"? Don't pray this way. Don't be praying specifically for her this way. And anyway, that's the end of the story. Okay, again, what do you do with this? I don't know. What's the lesson? I don't know. It's probably something really important about what kinds of personal prayers to say and how to think about shiduchin and how to think about praying for shiduchin. Okay, Amar Rav, Mishum Rabbi Reuven ben Estrobili. Rav quotes somebody named Rabbi Reuven, an uncommon name of an Amora or a Tana. This is a Tana. Min haTorah, min haNeviim, min haKsuvim, me Hashem ish leish. There are sources in the Torah and Neviim and Ksuvim that say the following attitude, that Hashem arranges marriages. Men haTorah d'chsiv, Where do you see it in the Chumash? Vayan Lavan and Besuel vayomru meyashem yatzah hadavar. You see it from the way Lavan and Besuel agree to Eliezer, and they say, well, I guess this is divinely arranged. It's Bashert. Min ha-Nevim d'chsiv. How do you see it from the Nevim? Like it says in the Paskin Shoftim, V'yaviva imo lo yadu kemi Hashem hi. Right, this is talking about the Shimshon and Delilah incident, where Shimshon was smitten by Delilah, and he wanted to go after her, and he wanted his parents to arrange it, and they weren't so happy. But the point is, because obviously it looked a lot like this was an intermarriage situation, even that is Me'ashem. That's also kind of odd. Dechsiv, and then Menaksuvim, like it says, Pazaka Mishle, Beis, Bayis, Veho, Nachlas, Avos, Me'ashem, Isha, Meshakelis. Okay. Pazaka Mishle. V'yama Rav, a new thing. Mishum Rebbe Reuven ben Estrabili. Now it says from this Tana, the Amr Labim Masnisa Tana, others just have it as an anonymous Braisa. Amr Reuven ben Estrabili, that Reuven ben Estrabili says the following, Ein Adam Nechshad B'davar, they move away from the Bashert thing. A person is not suspected of some kind of impropriety, El Im Kein Asa, unless there is some truth to it. The Imlo Asa, and if the person isn't fully guilty of it, Imlasa Kulo Asa Mitzaso. He did some of it. The Imlo Asa Mitzaso, and even if the truth is that the person didn't even partially do that thing that he suspected of, Hir Her Belibala Soso. He contemplated it. The Imlo Hir Her Belibala Soso. Well, at least Rach Eirim Sha'asav Samach. Well, at least he saw other people doing it, and he didn't, and it didn't bother him. Masiv Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov says, hold on, that's not true. How could you have that attitude? That if they're suspecting somebody, you mean you can never be wrongfully suspected of anything. If people are saying rumors about you, it must be true. That's really what this is really true. This is what this means. Yeah. Masiv Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov says, but that's not possible, because we know the Psukim say, Vayechafu b'nei Yisrael dvarim asher lo kein al Hashem lo kein. So the pasuk describes that there were people who were saying things that were like slanderous things about Hashem. Like Mar says, okay, well, that's different. Hasam lahachis hu de avod. Well, they were saying that just to make trouble. Okay, so in other words, when you have malicious rumor mongers, you can't escape from that, because that they can say anything about you, and then that doesn't suggest that you're guilty. Okay, I don't know what to do with that. So then maybe that's where this rumor is coming from. It's from the malicious rumor mongers. I don't know. Anyway, the Gemara says, Tashma, well, maybe there's another source. Vayikanu l'moshe b'machana li'aron k'doshem l'pasikin tehillim. So doesn't that sound like he was guilty? And let's see even more. And Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak Amar melamech shekol achad kinei l'ishto mimoshe. And the Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yitzchak says, this pasuk means that all of the men were all telling their wives, keep that guy Moshe out of the tent. Make sure you're never alone with Moshe. Kinuay, as if to say, like they're suspecting Moshe of infidelity with their carrying on affairs with the married women. And so you're going to tell me that was true? There's some truth to that rumor. Hasa, the Gemara says, that's different. Hasa mishum sinahu diavid. Well, that was different. That was because they had a kind of a hatred of Moshe at that time. Yeah, so it's the same kind of a problem. Tashma, Bryce says, okay, well, I'm Rabbi Yossi. Hey, Chalki. Rabbi Yossi has the following. Yehi Chalki yemisha choshtin osoba devar ve'einbo. I wish to be somebody that's kind of the butt of a scandalous rumor where I'm totally free of any wrongdoing. As if to say, because why? Because the embarrassed, injustice of it is such that it's such a big kapara for the person. So Rabbi Yossi says, I wish to be in that situation, because it'll be a big kapara for me. So anyway, but presumably that's such a possibility, that you might be actually unjustly accused of some kind of a thing. So Amar Rav Papa, Lididi, Rav Papa says, "Ledidi chashdan velo havibi." And similarly, Rav Papa says, "I was once an object of a slander, and it was just totally baseless." So you see that such a thing does exist. Gemara says, "Lo kasha habik kala de pasik, habik kala de lo pasik." Well, it depends. Anybody could be subject to a brief scandalous rumor, but it's going to die if it's really baseless. But if it's persistent, then that must mean there's some truth to it. The Gemara says, "Well, kala de lo pasik ad kama." Well, how long does it have to persist for it to be considered a kala de lo pasik? It has to, for it to be considered a persistent rumor. Amr Abaye, Amr li aim. Well, my mom once told me, "Dumi de masa yomo palga." The rumor mongers in the city, they move fast. So if the scandal is persisting more than a day and a half, that's already persistent. Anyway, Hani mili de lo pasik beni beni. And if it's persistent, it's only going to still have any significance if it didn't die at least for a little while. But if a pasik beni beni less than that. But if it died anyway in the middle, it just gets kind of resurrected. It doesn't mean anything. The chi pasik beni beni lo amranela de lo pasik machmas yera. That's only true if the rumor dies on its own. But if it dies because it's being suppressed, that doesn't prove anything. El pasik machmas yera lo. Vilo amranela de lo adar navat. Aval adar navat lo. And also when it reemerges, it's only significant if it grows. But if it doesn't really grow, then it doesn't count. V'lo amrnele delo the less lay oivim of alisle oivim oivim with the afkula kala. And also, whenever any rumor, even if it's persistent, if it just dies and then comes back again, maybe it only comes back because of these same malevolent people who are doing it. Doesn't really, okay, really unclear exactly what the whole point of this whole last section is about rumors and stuff. But at least, maybe we'll stop here. Stop at this mission.
All right.
All righty.